Good afternoon, and welcome back to Intrepid Radio. I am your host, Todd Schneck. You know, if you've been following this show for the last several years, you know that a significant majority of the guests that I feature here are your very typical and traditional business authors. And today's guest, we're doing something a little bit different. A lot of the audience that listens to this show are the traditional entrepreneur, the owner, the sales guy, the marketing guy. And I really think that the subject matter, the critically important subject matter of today's conversation is important in so many ways to the driven entrepreneur that we all are. And I want to ask my guest to get into that subject. But say hello to my guest. His name is Tom Rath. He's a best-selling author, researcher, and speaker. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks so much, Todd. It's great to be talking with you.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure. And just let me quickly say, I'm a big fan of StrengthsFinder 2.0, which is a great read that I got into a couple years ago. I'm sure a lot of my audience is familiar with that work. But we're here today to talk about the new one. It's called Eat, Move, Sleep. Critically important. But before we get into that conversation, Tom, do take a quick sec. Tell the audience a little bit about you and your background.
Yeah, I've been studying what makes great workplaces for the most part in my job at Gallup over the last 10 or 15 years, and done a lot of work on the topics of strengths, as you mentioned, and employee engagement, leadership development. And most recently, I've started to do a lot more work and research around the topic of well-being, meaning not just kind of the traditional wellness definition, but what are all the things that are really important to how people think about and experience their lives that not only make us more effective in our jobs each day, but also lead to better overall happiness, and that lead to health in the future as well. And after spending time with business leaders over the last 2 or 3 years here in the States in particular, one of my observations has been that poor health is one of the biggest business challenges of our generation. So that's kind of what led me into spending a lot more time on these topics over the last few years.
Yeah, well, you know, it's typically at this point in the conversation, Tom, where I ask the standard question, so why did you have to write this book? But I think I know why you had to write this book. You, and I did not know this about you, but you have a very personal and very serious health issue of your own that has forced you to really understand how to take care of oneself and all the things that one must do to live with more wellness. Talk about that journey and how it ultimately led to this book.
Sure. I found out when I was about 15 or 16 years old, so it's been well over 20 years ago now, that I had a very rare genetic condition that I discovered because I had cancer on my left eye and lost all sight in that eye permanently when I was 16. And that was also an indication I had this rare genetic disorder that causes cancer to grow throughout the body over a lifetime. So in the 20 years since then, I have battled, and I'm currently battling cancer in my kidneys and my pancreas, my spine, and a host of other areas. And so it's kind of been an ongoing battle and journey for me. But one of the products of that condition over the last, I'd say, 15 years in particular for me, as information has emerged on the internet, is that I essentially figured out that the only thing I can do to stay ahead of that condition is to figure out what are all the little things I can do in terms of my own lifestyle and my daily habits to improve my odds of living a little bit longer. And maybe 10 years ago, my colleagues and friends and other people around me, they'd kind of begin to realize that on the side of, from all the workplace research I was doing, I spent a lot of time on weekends and evenings pulling together all of this medical research to figure out what people could do to live a little bit longer and prevent not only cancer, but more recently, I've spent most of my time looking at heart disease, diabetes, and obesity, and these other major conditions that are combined. They take 2 out of 3 lives here in the United States. And about a year ago, I decided that after having 3 colleagues and friends pass away who were near my age from heart disease and cancer, that I needed to step away from some of the workplace research I was doing and spend all of my time pulling together these discoveries around health, if for no other reason than to have them in one place for my friends and people I care about.
Well, I failed to mention the tagline of the book is how small choices lead to big changes. And you just touched on that topic a minute ago. Really, is it fair to say that for a significant majority of us, our health is really, or frankly, let me rephrase it differently, our death is by 1,000 small cuts. I mean, it's the little things that we do every day that we don't even really think about that add up to what can be very serious health consequences.
Right. And that's, I think that's probably the biggest challenge that people face today is the fact that even in my extreme case, I just mentioned where I already have cancer in all of these organs, knowing that it might slow the growth of cancer a few years or a few decades down the road still is not enough to get me to have the right motivation to exercise tomorrow morning or to skip a milkshake this evening after dinner. It's, I've found even in my case, and especially as I talk to friends who have a risk of heart disease or diabetes, that it's a lot easier to make the right decisions today if you can connect making those good decisions to feeling better yet today or maybe tomorrow or having more energy to play with your kids or being more effective in a meeting or if you're giving a presentation at work. Those are much better incentives for making good choices throughout the day if those chronic diseases really are death by 1,000 cuts. I like the way you put that. It's those little choices that accumulate. And then when you do have a heart attack at 65 years old, it's too late to reverse a lot of that damage. I mean, you can slow it down then, but you're in a lot better place if you can start to make some of the right decisions in your 20s, 30s, and 40s instead.
Well, you in part just answered this next question, but I mean, it's a critical mindset shift that has to happen. I mean, how do we do that? I mean, look, the world didn't need another book about health. As great as Eat, Move, Sleep is, you mentioned earlier the absolute wealth of information online that, I mean, we know what we need to do. We know we probably deep down know the bad things that we do. How do you have any sense of how we begin to force that mindset shift and begin to help people understand the important role that they can play on combating some very serious stuff like heart disease and diabetes?
Yeah, I think, you know, the good news is that a lot of the traditional health and diet and exercise regimens I've seen out there emphasize doing something for a defined period of time. So in 45 days, you should lose 20 pounds, or you're going to get in shape and be able to run a mile in 8 minutes, whatever it might be. And that those are near-term goals that by definition have an end point. And the reality is that not only is it easier to make a small choice that you build into a lifestyle over time, but doing things that are smaller and easier wins in the near term, I've found to be a lot more sustainable over time as well. So just take a quick example from my own life of I used to put either originally sugar and then eventually artificial sweeteners and some cream in my coffee every single morning. And as I learned a little bit more about the way, even if you presume, which may not be safe, that an artificial sweetener is okay for your health, just having that sweet taste in your coffee in the morning makes you crave sweet and unhealthy foods throughout the day, even if it's not bad for you in the morning. And once it took about 2 weeks to eliminate that from my diet, but boy, did that one little change help me in making better decisions throughout the day over time. And it's become a part of my lifestyle, not something that I'm finished with in 45 days or 60 days. And there are little tricks like that in terms of sleeping and moving as well. I now do get a lot more activity each day and am sure to exercise every morning because I know it boosts my mood 3 hours later, 6 hours later, and 12 hours later. So especially if I need to be on in a meeting or know that I'm going to have some time with my kids late in the day at the park, I make sure that I do the right things from an activity and an eating standpoint for those short-term motivators. And then over time, you find yourself building patterns that happen to serve those 20 or 30-year interests that we're not very good at caring about in the moment.
Tom, I mentioned at the top of the show that a majority of my audience consists of entrepreneurs, and there's this mindset, there's this cultural expectation that it's sexy and it's cool and it's hip to work 80 hours a week and to pull all-nighters and to sacrifice the martini lunches and all. I mean, there's always been this idea, maybe Hollywood pushes this concept, that it's cool to run yourself ragged as an entrepreneur. We know that that is actually the absolute worst thing you can do. Do you sense, is the marketplace changing? I mean, it's more than a company saying, oh, hey, we're going to put bananas now on the front desk in the morning, so we've done what we can do to improve health. Do you sense the marketplace as a whole is shifting and there's more of a focus on wellness, or is there still a lot more to be done there?
There's, from a startup, an entrepreneurial and a company standpoint, there's a lot more to be done. And I think it's a good example there with sleep in particular, where I grew up in a Midwestern culture in Nebraska with that kind of farmer's work ethic, where not only for farmers, but the entrepreneurs I grew up around, boy, it was a badge of honor to say, I only slept 4 hours and I still closed a deal. But the more I've studied this topic and learned about the way our bodies work and our brains work, if you really want to be the most effective in meeting tomorrow afternoon, you need a solid 7 or 8 hours sleep, not only to be fresh that day, but just to remember some of the things you've learned in preparing the days in advance. Your sleep serves a very valuable purpose there. So, you know, I'd had that same mentality you refer to about sleeping as little as possible and treating sleep like the first expense that gets cut in a busy day for most of my life, until I got into this research and realized that an extra hour of sleep may be just as important of an investment as an extra hour of exercise or anything else that you could do in a given day, and that you'll be even more productive if you sleep better and sleep longer, which is, that was really counterintuitive to me. And I think companies right now, they have two challenging forces coming in each direction. One is that the biggest concern of CFOs and businesses today is rising healthcare costs, which the only real way to control healthcare costs, by the way, it's not, no matter where you stand on either side of the political debate, it's not regulation. It's not, the new healthcare act is really an insurance reform act for the most part. It's not about changing behaviors that actually reduce these chronic disease burdens that are killing 2/3 of Americans. And that's the part that's costing companies more than anything else when you look at it from a profit standpoint. So businesses need to help create a healthier workforce. Unfortunately, what I see happening in some cases with the best of intentions nowadays is that employers, small and large, are introducing things they call health risk appraisals and kind of cost containment programs. And there's nothing less motivating to an employee than telling her that you're buying a health program for her to reduce her risk so she's less of a cost to the organization's bottom line. I'm not sure that approach resonates with most employees from all the data that I've seen. I think the goal, especially for entrepreneurs and smaller businesses, needs to be creating a culture around health and well-being where it's valued for someone to show up for a meeting where you can tell they're well-rested and have good ideas and not that they only got 4 hours sleep the night before. And it's more socially acceptable in a small group of 15 people for someone to go to work out in the middle of the day because they'll actually get more done even though they have less hours based on all the research I've seen if they take care of their health and get some activity throughout the day. I was in Minneapolis with a group of business leaders at a business school a couple of weeks ago, and there were several organizations there who are doing all the right things in terms of helping employees to have sit and stand desks and treadmills to work on throughout the day and bringing in not only the right foods, but helping employees to think about how they can create healthier families as well. So I do see real encouraging examples primarily from smaller organizations, but I think we've got to see that occur with a critical mass or majority of the American workforce to really see the change we need.
But it has an impact, too, on improved creativity and improved relationships. And you could take the relationships so far as to say, boy, if you're sleepy and you're cranky, you're going to treat the prospect poorly, and that could impact sales. I mean, your health and wellness applies to virtually every aspect of how you execute on a day-to-day basis in business.
And I think you just hit on something important there, which is that there's nothing more critical to someone's health and increasing performance in the workplace than thinking about building a culture of health and well-being in a workforce, not only for creativity, but just for sheer achievement. And Also, one of the things that fascinated me in the work we did at Gallup is that someone who has a manager that they've had a real poor relationship with for some time could be 33% more susceptible to heart disease and stroke. So, I mean, if we could just eliminate some of the primary stressors in building better workplaces, that in itself could eliminate quite a bit of disease burden. And, you know, the connections, we're just scratching the surface right now, are the connections between a work environment and an employee's health. One of my best friends and our chief researcher at Gallup on these topics, we were talking one day and he asked the question about, could the quality of someone's manager be even more important for their physical health than the quality of their physician? And I would bet on that being true.
Boy, I would too. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's that is powerful. I may pause for a minute just to think on that. Now, I love the organization of the book into three very simple concepts: eating, moving, and sleeping. I mean, frankly, that alone kind of simplifies what you have to be really conscious about. Let me ask you this question. Are you finding people saying, well, I'm going to focus on the eat side of this thing, and I'm not going to worry about moving or sleeping? I mean, can you pull one out and have dramatic improvement, or do all three of those have to work in concert?
It's, you know, I think that was the most important learning for me from all of the work, is that I might have thought it's better to just focus on one thing at a time and to really figure out how to eat right and then move on to the moving piece. But as I started to read more research on this, if you assign people, if you have, in a real experiment, when people are assigned either be in one group where they just work on their diet, a second group works on solely exercise, and a third group is asked to do both things at the same time, which in theory is more to work on, it's the third group that is the most successful at either of the two first elements of eating right or moving more. And so that's the most important learning, is that if you get a good night's sleep, that's the single best way to ensure you work out in the morning, eat the right food throughout the day, get a good night's sleep the next night, and kind of start that upward spiral and cycle. So if you want the easiest road to success, it's important to work on all three in parallel.
Tom, from your own personal experiences as you combat what you're facing, and then plus with all the research you've done and other learnings, if you could share with someone two or three very simple, very basic things that they could start right now that would begin to have a real positive impact and then build some momentum to the bigger changes that have to happen, what would some of that counsel be?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, especially when you're talking about being more effective and having more energy in the workplace, is to focus on the goal of movement throughout the day as much as you focus on getting 30 minutes of exercise 5 days a week or whatever the general guidelines are. That's, for me personally, that's probably been the most influential learning of the last couple of years, where if I'm either walking at a slow pace and typing throughout the day, or on a stationary bike and reading, or simply getting up and having a walking meeting with a colleague, or when I'm in my office, I kind of do laps and circles around my workspace with a wireless headset, and boy, do I have a lot more energy in the afternoon for my work and for my 2 and 4-year-old kids when I'm moving throughout the day, in addition to getting exercise whenever possible. So that's one big one. Then I think from a dietary standpoint, if you look at it broadly, one of the key elements is to think about how can you eat foods that have about 1 gram of protein for every 1 gram of carbohydrates, instead of most packaged foods have about a ratio of about 10 carbs for every 1 gram of protein, or in some cases 20-1. So that's a quick shortcut as I go throughout the day to look at lower amounts of carbs and as close to zero added sugar as possible from a dietary standpoint. And those little shortcuts help when you're trying to select the right foods to put in your home in the first place or in your office, so you don't make bad choices at the last second and you're not tempted. And then from a sleep standpoint, I think even if it's not convenient in terms of the number of hours in a day, to figure out how can you get 7 and ideally 8 hours of sleep, or the opportunity to get that much sound sleep each and every night to keep your schedule on track. And to do that for the sake of your creativity and intellection and energy as much as anything else. I've been talking with a lot of leaders in the healthcare industry recently, just as a quick aside, and they, nurses in particular, are often some of the least healthy people if you look across professions. And a part of that is that they always put everyone else's health first, because they have the best intentions in the world at serving patients and serving this world. But one thing I've realized in talking with some of these groups is, even if you want to put everyone else first and put your job first and your family first, in order to be a more effective parent, you need to exercise and have as much energy throughout the day as possible. In order to be more effective as a manager, you need to get a good night's sleep. And in order to be as effective as you possibly can in contributing to your community, you need to be doing the right things in terms of what you put into your body so you have energy during the day and you're around for a long time to do it. So if you can start to make some of those connections, it makes building a more healthy lifestyle quite a bit easier.
Yeah. Boy, you mentioned a counterintuitive learning that you had a few answers ago. Share with us one other or two other really interesting counterintuitive bits of knowledge that would probably forehead smack most of us.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I mentioned earlier on is that just thinking about how you eliminate as much sweet food earlier in the day, not just because it has sugar in it, but because that makes your body crave those things later in the day and helps you to eat the right foods over time. So that was kind of interesting to me, where I'd always been thinking about, well, is the stevia better than the NutraSweet or the Splenda or whatever it might be? But the real answer is anything that tastes sweet makes you want more things that taste sweet, which surprised me quite a bit. The other thing that I learned when we were looking at some of the elements around sleep is that the effect of lighting and temperature on the way you sleep has a profound effect on not only how long you sleep, but how well you sleep throughout the night. So any way that you can dim your lights even earlier in the evening in your house, if you have dimmers on your lights or turn lights off, that allows your body to produce more melatonin, which you need to be asleep at night. And to something as simple as avoiding electronics in the hour before bed, not only for the sake of keeping nagging discussions on email out of your mind in the middle of the night, but even the light from a laptop or a smartphone can cause disruptions to your sleep. And then one of the things that's helped me most, a small little quirk from the research, is turning the temperature down by 3 or 4 degrees in the bedroom where I sleep compared to what I'm used to. And that helps you to stay asleep in the middle of the night because you don't wake up feeling too warm, which is a common phenomenon. So they're just small adjustments like that in all these areas that accumulate pretty quickly.
Well, I used to complain to Mrs. Schnick that the bedroom was too cold at night, but now I realize she's the most brilliant woman on the planet.
There you go.
Hey, as is typical with most Tom Rath outputs, there are some great assessment tools and some other online vehicles that you can dive into at this. Talk about some of those real quick.
Yeah, one of the things I learned as we went through the kind of 90 learnings or suggestions in the book is that we all have very unique needs based on our own circumstances and where we are with our kind of health choices today. So we created a quick inventory. It's just 5 or 10 minutes. It's free for everyone online, whether they have a book or not. And once you go through that, it will give you a very customized deep move sleep plan with 1, 2, or 3 ideas for the next 30 days to think about adding into your lifestyle and testing out. And I hope that's something that can be useful to a wide audience to use, not only individually, but as a part of a group and team activity as well. And that's all at eatmovesleep.org.
All right. Well, Tom, we're about out of time. I really appreciate you spending a few minutes with me. Once more, before I let you go, how can people get in touch with you, get their hands on this book, and repeat where they can get these tools and assessment?
Yeah, there's a host of tools and articles and references and group activities on eatmovesleep.org that I'd encourage people to check out.
All right. Tom Rath, researcher, speaker, and best-selling author of many books, including the new one, Eat, Move, Sleep, How Small Choices Lead to Big Changes. Tom, again, it was a real pleasure. Thanks for stopping by and joining me.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, that wraps this episode. On behalf of my guest, Tom Rath, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you soon on Intrepid Radio. What you want? What you want? You've been listening to Intrepid Radio, hosted by me, Todd Schnick. You can find the show at intrepidradioshow.com. If you enjoyed the broadcast, kindly leave a rating and review on iTunes. Until next time, stay bold, and I'll see you soon on the Intrepid Radio Show.